guys. Welcome to Uncommon Faith. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Amber.
Today we have my associate pastor and friend, and I won't say it again.
I'll say it. Yeah, the Ryan. Yeah, it's good to be here. Ryan. No, I always tell Ashley, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, then you know why I would say this. But every time I see Ashley, I tell her she's the bane of my existence.
I love this. Ashley, you have to be nice to me today. We have a pastor on.
That's right. That's right. Okay. That's right. Yeah, Ashley, Ashley makes me do all the things I'm uncomfortable with, like recording podcasts and reels on Instagram. It's awesome.
So if you don't know, this person that we have on here today was our youth pastor, and he tasked me with being in charge of the youth group social media. Well, that means that I'm going to put him on Reels. That's what that is what is current right now. That is what's going to – so technically, it is your fault. You gave me the job.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't realize what it entailed, so it is my fault.
But you know what? Everybody enjoys those reels, and I think that they should come back, and everybody would love them because that's really what you were there for.
Yeah, I've talked to the new youth pastor. Absolutely. I've talked to the new youth pastor about getting rid of them and erasing them, but he won't do it. And I forgot the password, so I can't log in and do it myself. It's
terrible.
Probably
still some in the drafts. That are on my phone. So everybody enjoys them. They're fantastic. I even did at the end, I did like this whole montage of all, like when he was going up to associate pastor and like a cute little like in memoriam, but he's not dead. And he refused to let me post it. He's like, just send it to me. So I tried to slip it in there.
So is he as bad as I am or worse?
I think they're great. I don't think they're bad. I think that he – I think they're funny.
Amber, they're definitely bad. There's nothing funny. Yeah. Oh.
No, I'm just saying if you're worse than I am as far as not posting things, she probably has 20 drafts of me in her folder too. I won't let her post any of them.
Oh, yeah. I haven't posted on Instagram for about 2 years. I intentionally forgot my password. I just don't like
it. There you go.
Yeah, I can't do it. I'm terrible at it.
I would say yes. Amber, you're bad at it. You're both bad at it. It is not your...
Yes.
But I think it's worse in terms of me and Amber have a show that we need to promote. And she's bad at that. And Ryan... You still have a job regardless of if you are on social media or not. So it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But, you know, for those of us who rely on it.
I don't know. Those reels really hurt me.
They did not hurt you. In fact, I think it made you more popular, to be honest. Especially with the middle school girls. Like, they really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, that's my target audience.
That's funny.
This is target audience. The most just a heads up, a lot of the times Ryan sometimes will put his foot in his mouth.
Oh, you mean like I just did when I said middle school girls are my target audience?
Yes. That might happen. So
it's like Michael Scott with his dating profile label, like little kid lover. Just doesn't work, man, when you say things about how you love.
Oh my gosh. No.
Doesn't work very well.
No.
No, absolutely.
You might as well get the white van and throw candy out.
That's right.
Actually, we took a white van down to Mexico for our mission trip, and they were handing candy out to children.
No.
They were handing candy out to children.
That's right.
And they're like, come here, little
children. Oh my gosh, no.
Candy. I'm like, this is so bad. This looks so bad, guys.
No.
So awesome.
right, Pastor Ryan, I want to know, how'd you get your start? What led you to do what you do?
Well, it's kind of an accident. So I started off in college as a civil engineering major, and then I realized I wasn't good enough at science. Like, physics just kicked my butt, man. It was so bad. Wow. And so I switched to math, but not like a full math degree, like math education, because I also wasn't smart enough to just focus on math. So I took the easier route of math education, became a teacher. I taught for like 4 years, and then had no intention of going into ministry. Wow. And about 4 years into teaching, I got involved at a church that didn't have a youth pastor. They had a good sized youth group, but they just needed people to volunteer. And so I started helping out, went on mission trips, went on trips, went to weekly services, and I really enjoyed it. And so I had no intention of doing it at all. But I woke up one day and realized that I really loved these kids, and talked with the pastors. We just sort of prayerfully chatted through what it would be like to come on staff as a full-time youth pastor. This was 10 years ago, actually, yeah, right about this season. And so it's been 10 years this month that I've been working in ministry, and it was not my plan in the slightest. The week I was supposed to start in ministry, or the week I started as a pastor, was actually the week that I was going to start my master's degree in educational leadership, because I wanted to become a principal. And so I had my whole life planned out. I was going to be a middle school teacher, and then I wanted to move to a high school and coach high school basketball. I'd been coaching middle school basketball. I love basketball, love coaching. And then I was hoping to become a principal and work in administration, and it just, God had different plans. And so I sit here today, 10 years from that decision. And, I've worked as a youth pastor for about 8 of those years or 9 of those years. And then other roles now, which is kind of fun, because I'm too old and too uncool and too awkward to be a youth pastor. So
I think it's so amazing how often our plans are rarely God's plans for us.
Oh, totally.
He literally picked you up and set you somewhere else.
Yeah, our pastor's wife, Julie, talked about that a little bit yesterday. And just, yeah, I think God's plans are always better. But in the moment, man, it often goes differently than I think it will. And absolutely. It's kind of amazing how that works. So.
Well, also, you have said, though, that you are like a huge introvert.
Oh, I'm a total introvert. Yeah. I've noticed, like, when I was a kid, I was painfully shy. I had friends and stuff, but I didn't really enjoy being around people. I kind of like to be by myself, and I'd say I'm still that way today. Although I love people a lot more now than I used to, but definitely introvert, which is another reason why Ashley is the bane of my existence, because she never stops talking.
Bugging. So, she drags it out of you.
That's right.
This is not an episode where we pick on Ashley, okay?
Oh, we're not picking. That's a good thing to be able to do to people.
I talked to your listeners. I polled your listeners, and they appreciate this. So I think we need to do more of it.
Oh, no.
If it weren't for your bugging and doing all of that, do you really think I'd have a podcast with you right now?
No.
Probably not. So you're saying, it wouldn't have been my idea.
My flaws and my annoyances and all that is actually benefiting other people.
Yes, but I wouldn't call them flaws or annoyances.
Ryan might disagree. I don't know.
No, I like to tease Ashley, but she's wonderful. I could tell you lots of stories. So, like, she's the secret, like, glue for our life group that plans food and builds relationships. And, we get to interact in a lot of different ways. So I secretly like Ashley. I don't like to tell her that a lot, just to keep it humble. But
keep it humble.
Right.
Don't want my head getting, like, too big about being the secret glue.
So I did not plan my life to be the way it is right now. Have the two of you ever had God just wreck your plans in a good way?
Slightly. I don't know what, I'm sure it's in a good way. I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you this. I dated a guy in high school, and he wanted to join the Marines, And I was like, I don't want to be a military wife.
That backfired. Yeah, big and God's time.
Like, okay. Yeah. So, you know.
I feel like God probably says at least once a minute, like, challenge accepted.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, right? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. I remember, so I worked at a Young Life camp during a couple summers. And I used to think that the church, like the local church, was just like so messed up. And I told somebody, I was like, if I ever worked in ministry, I would want to work for, I would want to do it with Young Life. Like, I think it's so much better than the local church. They actually reach people. And here I am, like 15 years after I said that, I feel like God at that moment was like, challenge accepted.
Did you ever once in your life see you being in the position you are now when you were younger?
So the first time when I was, it was like a sophomore in college. So again, I'm an introvert. I hate me. Even today, I like hate being in front of people. My sophomore English education class, I had to get up and give a speech. It was only like 2 minutes long. And I was so nervous. All I could do was read a sheet of paper. That's like all I could do. And they, I don't even think they were my words. I may have plagiarized quite a bit of it. And,
like, good to know.
Yeah. The fact that I could ever be where I'm at today is just an act of God. So yeah.
That's amazing.
Honestly, I think even going, like, it amazes me every time, you know, any of you guys like go up there and, you know, you do back-to-back services or whatever. I do not understand how you guys remember everything that you wanted to say.
Yeah. Welcome to the like, club. You have to
know, like how?
Oh yeah.
Like, how can you just like, okay, I have this one point and then I'm going to like exaggerate and like, and say all these things. I'm like, I would have to have everything written down. Just read it off the page like that. Oh, like totally. I can't. Yeah. I don't know how you guys do that.
Yeah. It's a learned skill for sure. I think it comes easier to guys like Joel, cause he's so theatrical and, you know, so well spoken, but yeah, definitely something I had to learn. I think the first couple of sermons that I gave, messages that I gave like 10 years ago, I'd probably be embarrassed to listen to now just because, oh yeah. How I read off the page or forgot what I was going to say or how short it was. Like, I think in every pastor's history is that message they gave that was supposed to be like 25 minutes, but ended up being like 5 or 10 because they, they just didn't realize that they were supposed to speak that long, or they just like went off script and said something really awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you said anything awkward?
You mean besides what I said at the beginning about my target audience being middle school girls? I once got up. Well, I mean, I could come up with like 20 or 30 things because I say dumb things all the time. But I once was up. It was like a staff or a volunteer celebration. At my previous church, and they showed a picture, and I don't remember why, of Isaac, one of my kids. And when the picture came up, I was like, well, at least we know that one's mine, because he looks just like me. And like there was this gasp from all the women in the audience, and questioning my wife's faithfulness was apparently not the way to reach the heart of the women in the church, but.
That's a classic.
It's been repeated
story.
Like 100 times over in stupid ways because, yeah, Ashley knows.
Yes. I mean, I've been present for a lot of, you know, your more recent, you know, foot and mouth situations. Sure. I mean, any time you bring up Sarah, I think for sure.
Oh, yeah. No.
Your wife, yes. Sarah. Like, everyone in our life group will be like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine being my wife. She has to go into church every time I speak wondering what dumb thing I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe God made a mistake 10 years ago. Yeah. Should have stuck with teaching, man.
No, I hope that you wouldn't say any of those types of things teaching middle school kids math. Like, that's probably not a good idea.
That's a good point.
Yeah. No, I think it makes you more relatable and it definitely keeps us entertained. Otherwise we'd be falling asleep in church, right?
Yeah, well, I'm glad my stupidity can keep you tuned in.
That you definitely mention quite often, and I do appreciate, I'm sure Amber does too, appreciate when pastors get up there and they tell their real life stories, their real life issues, past or present, instead of going up there and be like, I'm better than all of you guys. This is what you're supposed to do in life and to be, you know, perfect Christian people. I think we've definitely have come across other pastors in our lifetime who have been like that. But you've definitely talked about, you know, how drinking was an issue in college for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to talk on that?
Sure. So I come from a, I come from a broken home. One of the things that I like to say, or one of the things I heard that I think really, it just so perfectly describes divorce divorce is violence. And I think it's violence, not in like a physical way, but I think if for anyone who's been through divorce or comes from a divorced home, I think you understand what it's like to have sort of the safest place, right? Your family, your home just broken and to have your time split in a way that I don't think was really how God designed it. And so walking through that, as a kid, certainly impacted and shaped my identity. And one of the things that I think I've dealt with throughout my life, particularly as a kid, was just rejection and a fear of rejection, which sort of manifested itself in my life in needing to be the high achiever. Whether that was school or athletics, sports, really anything. And so when I reached middle school and high school, I certainly found my identity in things like that, and in really not being who my dad had been. I mean, we have a great relationship today, praise God. But there were times in which, as a kid, it was hard, and so I sort of modeled my life after his anti-type, so to speak, and just trying to be who he wasn't. And it was really kind of the crossroads of my life. The point where things got really hard was in high school. When I started to reach the end of myself, there was a season in which I struggled in school as a freshman in college. In high school, I started dating and ended up cheating on one of my girlfriends, which was not my best moment, but also compounded. It was compounded by the fact that right, my dad had cheated on my mom when I was a kid, and I'd always told myself that I wouldn't do that. And so for someone who finds his identity in his performance, in working to not be a failure, that was pretty devastating for me. And the way that I dealt with that was really with drinking. So there was a period of about 2.5 years where I'd call myself at points of time in that a binge drinker, just drinking heavily, probably 3 nights a week. Didn't get good grades in school. Almost got kicked out of the dorms because I drank so heavily. Almost flunked out of college because I just took it. I didn't take it seriously.
Wow.
And one of the nights really when I hit rock bottom, it was at the culmination of this season of struggling in school, struggling in sports too. I had a pretty severe injury my junior year of high school, which kind of impacted the rest of high school. And then cheating on my girlfriend and dealing with the aftermath of that. I woke up like 2 years later after a night. I'd been a binge drinker, but this one night I gave into using some drugs that I didn't really want to use. And I remember coming down from that high and just crying out, you know, it was like 2 a.m. I'm sitting on my couch coming down from this high. And I just said, Jesus save me. That's all I said. I had nothing else to say. And I can see as I look back at my life from that moment on, when just the thread of redemption came into my life from the friends that God brought to me, to the way he just shifted my thoughts and relationships. He plugged me into a local church, which I really needed. And so yeah.
That's amazing. It's never too late.
Yeah. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. And yeah, knowing he was there through it all. and knowing that
he was there through it all
to redeem and heal and restore and to bring life out of things that I never would have thought possible. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
I think that it can be really difficult, you know, like seeing your parental figure. You see what is going on behind closed doors. And, you know, you see all the things you don't want to do. Or, you know, you're kind of just, well, this was my example. And this is what I'm going to, this is what I end up falling into and whatnot. How do you deal with something like that? You know, I'm sure even in, not just in your experience, but, you know, you've seen throughout the years, like people being a certain way to the outside world, whether through church and whatnot, but being a completely different person behind closed doors and that effect that it can have on you, you know, like if it's in your own family or close friend.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think what's really helped me. So the, I'm not a pastor today, because I'm extremely skilled or gifted. I mean, you know, I'm at heart a painful introvert. I don't have the giftings of others, and I'm not here because I lived a good life either. So, as I look back at my story, right, I can identify some things that I did really wrong, from drinking to some of the things I did while I was drinking to the way I've treated people. And one of the stories that I've shared in messages that typifies this for me is my wife, Sarah, is like the most straight-laced person, the nicest person, the kindest person you'll ever meet. She's never done anything wrong in her life. I mean, truly, she's amazing. And she told one of my high school classmates that she was marrying me. And he got like viscerally angry because he found out that this wonderful woman was marrying a guy like me. And so I can't stand up as a pastor and claim that I have it all together and claim that I'm here because I've done something. The opposite is true. It's God's grace that allows me to do that. And so I think that has stripped away from me, Ashley, to answer your question, the need to perform for people, because I just can't stand up and claim that I have it all together. I think the other thing that's helped me out in that was about 5 or 6 years ago. I was a part of a men's group. I joined a men's group, and it wasn't an accountability group. It wasn't a Bible study. It was a group of men who gathered together to talk about their emotions and to be real and raw about where they're at, the positive and the negative. I've been in a group with your husband, Ashley, for the last year, and it was so life-giving for me to hear guys take off the mask of the way that we often portray ourselves to others, and just to sort of share openly what was going on, the highs, the good things, the celebrations, but also the lows, the struggles, right, the sinful tendencies in all of us, and to recognize that we can be raw and real and be shown grace and not left where we're at to just continue to struggle, but loved in the process of becoming more like Jesus. And so that's really helped me to those two things, recognizing that I don't have it all together, that I'm not that great. And then being loved in spite of all that has really helped me to be open and raw and authentic and real. And sometimes a little too self-deprecating and in some of that, but
yeah,
I'd rather be that way than acting like I have it all together, because I definitely don't. I'm still a work in progress.
But I love that vulnerability in my pastors. Like, I feel like that's like a quality that all pastors should have. I think it keeps you humble.
I was going to say it's refreshing.
Yeah, it keeps you humble, because I think that with pastors or even anyone with this kind of platform, we were just talking about it with another guest about, you know, there's a lot of spiritual warfare that kind of like spiritual attacks that happen more so for the people in, you know, your kind of position. So don't go into it having this like, you know, like ego or facade that you do have it all together and you're perfect, because only God uses perfect people to, you know, share the gospel and whatnot.
Yeah.
So that's much appreciated. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things that summarize this for me. It's really vulnerability. I think you have to be willing to share who you really are, and not to hide pieces of yourself. I mean, I don't think we're capable of finding healing in things that we're not willing to be vulnerable with. And that for me starts in prayer with God. You know, I think of Psalm 51 where, you know, David comes before God after he's been confronted by one of God's prophets and just devastated over the sin that he's committed. And he asked God to create a clean heart in him. I think it continues though, as you're just like David was vulnerable with other people. But I think vulnerability has to transition quickly to humility, or it's not helpful. And to me, humility is, I think there can be a false humility that we find in being vulnerable. I think it quickly has to shift to humility where we don't think of ourselves as greater or lesser, but we begin to think of ourselves less as we experience the grace and mercy of Jesus. And that's where I have to be careful too. Sometimes in being vulnerable, I can get stuck in this rejection framework I have, right? My vulnerability becomes a way that I beat myself up over my failures, over my struggles, over my sins, rather than coming to the cross and recognizing that Jesus has forgiven me for all that. And my willingness to be vulnerable is then a pathway for me to find forgiveness and healing and to focus more on Jesus. So I think I think vulnerability is good, but it has to lead us to a place where we stop focusing on ourselves and begin to focus more on others than on Jesus. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you struggle similarly with those feelings of rejection? Have you ever dealt with some of that, or is it different for the two of you?
I laugh because I feel like my whole life is rejection. Come on. You can go first, Amber, though, because you haven't been speaking.
You know, I'm looking right at you. I personally can't think of a moment where I felt like that, but I'm sure I have. What about you, Ash?
Is this another part where you're going to be like, brain damage?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, sometimes it's such a blessing.
Yes.
It's like Amber forgets everything even before the strokes. And I remember everything.
Every single detail.
I think that is so difficult just for me personally. Like, it's literally a blessing and a curse because I can remember everything. I can remember how things smelled or like words that people said, positive or negative. I feel like, growing up rejected by my own family, rejected by, you know, friends, boyfriends, people in the church, like literally all my life rejected. Then you get to throw on, hey, Ashley, why don't we put you in the music business? Rejection all the time. So yes, yeah. to your question.
Yeah. Well, how does that work itself out in you?
Is this pastoral care?
Your rejection. Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you cope with it?
How do I cope with rejection?
Because here's the way I've coped with it in my life. And I think we shared some of this, right? The way that I can think of three ways. So alcohol was the way I used to do it. Mm-hmm. But I've come a long way, but the two ways I probably cope with it today is distraction, right? It's so easy to get distracted and just, right, take my mind off it, whether it's, I don't scroll social media, so look up sports websites, sports podcasts, just find something else to do, or achievement, right? So if I achieve a lot, then I won't feel rejected. Mm-hmm. Neither one of those work very well, but how do you deal with like a fear of rejection? And
I think probably the same things. Like, I am the queen of distraction. You already know my TV obsession and my movie obsession. That's a huge way for me to check out and like go off into this like fantasy land where like it's not my problems. That's why I can't even watch reality TV anymore, because I'm like, I can't deal with your problems. Give me fake problems. And then achievement, like, but I mean, it also doesn't help, like, if I'm feeling a certain way and then someone says like, well, you have this, and this. You've done this and this and this. You don't need to feel like that. And I'm like, well, it doesn't stop the feelings. So yeah, achievement and distraction. What about you, Amber?
I would say probably distraction. I think that's something that you and I share. We try and do something that will just distract us from our present and the issues that we're dealing with constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, then connecting back with that vulnerability and humility, I love the story of Jesus's restoration of Peter. It's in John 21. After Peter denies Jesus three times, Jesus is resurrected from the dead. And Peter denied Jesus three times after publicly in front of all the other disciples stating that he wouldn't. And so Jesus shows up and he restores Peter, but I love the way that he does it. He forces Peter. He can't deal with, he can't live in distraction or achievement or alcoholism. He can't just unplug and ignore his failure. And so Jesus takes him through his failure moment by moment, step by step. He forces Peter to embrace his weakness. He forces Peter to be vulnerable in front of the other disciples, and then he restores him. Jesus pursues him. He exposes his weaknesses, his failures, his sinful struggles, and he restores him in such a way that allows him to move forward. And I just love that story. It connects those from vulnerability to humility. And then actually there's probably a third piece where Peter then gets to go serve others and live in such a way that brings Jesus glory and that brings him peace. And so yeah, I think it's so important. And if we don't go through those things, you know, I think we really live fake lives in front of other people where internally we have these struggles. Internally we battle distraction and overachievement and we numb our pain with different substances or TV or whatever. Rather than allowing Jesus to do that inner heart work that's so necessary.
I think part of having a distraction, though, is it's probably, you know, like a cop-out. Like I can easily – so say I have a book to read. And that's my distraction. I'm going to probably zip through those books faster than I'm going to, you know, like do like any of like the religious self-help books. You know, like I can't tell you how long it took me to read the book The Uninvited. Like you have to do like so much self-reflection. Like I can't deal with my own problems right now. Like I can't look, you know, inward. So that's probably like that is probably why it's my go-to. And I have said this to Amber. This is a realization recently. My favorite show growing up was always Full House. And we're like, why was that my favorite show? Because that came out when I was like 5 years old. I wanted my family to be like the Tanners. And how sad is it for a five-year-old to already like realize that about their home life? I haven't talked about any of this stuff on the podcast, and I'm probably going to leave it at that. Yeah. But
well, no, and I think my background is I come from a divorced home, but even if because your parents weren't divorced, but there was a lot of stuff behind the scenes and I think as we think about our lives, right, we're the product, just like, you know, I shared, we're a product of the way God's designed us, right? Extroverted, introverted, right? Artistic, or in my case, not an artistic bone in their body, right? This is where you and I, Ashley, are like complete and total opposites. I don't think God could have made two people more different than you and I when it comes to like artistic ability and how much we love to talk. And there's probably some other things in there too. But it's not just the way God has wired us. It's also the experiences that we've had as children and as teenagers that really wires us or shapes us and creates the things that we struggle with. Like you may not come from a divorced home, but I'd assume based on what you've been through that a lot of what you deal with is similar to what I would deal with, even though we're completely different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Amber? This is me deflecting now.
I was going to say, Ashley is not ready for vulnerability.
I'm ready for vulnerability. I'm not ready for that level of vulnerability on this show yet. Because there's a lot of other things involved in that, and so I mean, I talk about
excuses. Those sound like excuses to me, Amber. I feel like she could do it if she wanted.
Wait for the book.
She could do it. She just needs that support in doing it.
Yeah, I think I think Amber, you can probably relate on a lot of these things.
I was just gonna say, you know my story, and you'll know more when the book comes out.
Yeah.
Divorce or no divorce, I feel like we are, you know, we come from other human beings who are going to have their own issues, whether they're trying to, you know, make up for what they were missing in their upbringing or overcompensating and all those things. And, you know, it's a continuous cycle.
Absolutely. I mean, divorce would have been four times in my home. So absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, regardless of what family we come from, I think we all seek acceptance from others. And the reason, man, the reason Jesus is such good news to me is that he accepts us by grace through faith, not because we do something or accomplish something. And so I can be vulnerable. I can be humble because I know that it's not anything that I've done that leads to my acceptance, leads to my not being rejected. And that's such good news for me. Such good news for me. And why do you think, you know, going back to, I think what you had originally mentioned, Ashley, about how sometimes people aren't real. Why do you think sometimes in church people have a tendency to not be authentic, not be vulnerable? Amber, what do the two of you think?
My biggest reason why I think people do it is accountability. People don't like it. They don't like to be told when they're doing something incorrect or that they might need some guidance along the way. People don't like accountability because that's other people noticing their flaws, the flaws that they're already afraid of.
Yes on that. And also I think that, you know, being real and super vulnerable is opening yourself up for criticism, for judgment. Because even though we can say it all day long, like only God can judge us, like you're going to have a different view on somebody once you've heard certain parts of their story or see them do something that you don't agree with or whatever. Like it's human nature. We change our thinking. And that can be really difficult for someone to want to open up and be real.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
What would you say to somebody who, because I know that is a common thing, daddy issues, and then how that can relate to your relationship with God. What would you say to someone who, you know, is still consistently in that place where they have put their relationship with God parallel of their relationship with their father, and if it was a bad relationship, whether their father was, you know, a Christian, like a believer, or even not a believer, but there's that like barrier and then they just can't seem to come to God in that vulnerable way and feel that, you know, acceptance and unconditional love because of that. I'm hitting you with the deep questions.
Yeah. No, I think our view of God as Father is always going to be related to the people that we interact with here on earth, primarily our earthly fathers. And so I think we constantly have to refine that understanding of who God is based on how he has chosen to reveal himself. And God has chosen to reveal himself, not just through our families, but through his word. So God shows us who he is. From Genesis to Revelation. And you know what? He shows us who he is through Jesus. So Jesus said, Look, if you don't see anything else, just know this. I've come to reveal who God the Father is. So I think that we have that. But here's the reality for all of us. Like, I think on some level, we all have an intellectual understanding of who God is. But it's hard to overcome our experiences. And so I think the best way to do it is to join a community of people who love Jesus and to wrestle this out. I mentioned this, you know, the group I was in with Evan, one of the things that we do at the beginning is we share our testimony, which is really what our life was like as a child, what our life was like in elementary school, what our life was like in middle school, high school, college, where we're at today, and how our relationships to our parents, our moms and our dads inform that. It's one of the most raw things, vulnerable things you'll ever do. You can, you know, if you talk to Evan about it or any of the guys I've ever been in a group with, you just sort of sit there at the end, you feel completely exposed because you've shared the inner workings of your heart and mind. And one of the thing that just takes the cake at when you end it is all the men in the room go around and they share with the guy who's given their testimony what God would say to them if he was in the room. And I think this connects back to what Jesus did with Peter, right? He took him back to his failures. He took him back to his moment of weakness and he rewired and reshaped that for him. I think this is what happens when we are vulnerable in the context of godly community. And we allow not just the words of scripture, but the words of other human beings to rewire and reshape our perception of who God is. And I don't think if you try to do this on your own without other people who love Jesus, if you try to reorient your framework and your posture towards God without community, it won't happen. We weren't created to do it alone. I think you have to have scripture and you have to have people who love Jesus. It's so vital.
And I think I've said it before, like to you, probably to you both, but I know that like staying within like that group, like joining a church and getting into like a small group or like having your people and maybe even like overly investing and volunteering and whatnot, like it keeps me out of trouble. Not just like, I mean, I don't drink, but you know, like keeping your mind,
keeps your mind right,
mind on the right track. So you're not like tempted to just be like, oh, well, I'm off, you know, because any one of us, I think, can just spiral if we're left out on our own.
Yeah. The whole myth of being able to do life on your own is exactly that, a myth. Have you ladies ever had someone really reframe the character of God for you or speak life into you in a way that maybe you didn't understand before? Like for you, Ashley, has Kayla ever said something to you that just like completely reoriented your mind?
I think that it's like a combination of things said that I have like gathered and attitudes. I think growing up, I had this specific idea of how Christians should be, how people in the church should be. They don't drink, they don't smoke, they don't say bad words. They, you know, and as I got older and I'm around more people, I'm as an adult, I'm more involved in church. And like now I'm the adult. I see things differently in terms of we're all human. We're all making mistakes, you know, and that has changed, you know, from when I was younger. What about you, Amber?
I mean, absolutely. And I think it's been as of recently in the past 5 years with everything that I've gone through, it's just been a lot of reassurance and scripture and people saying, you know, God doesn't leave you. And you kind of question that sometimes going through some traumatic things. And so I've had plenty of people reassure me with scriptures and just the way they live their lives, which has been amazing to see. I'm grateful for that. And I wouldn't have experienced that if I wasn't involved in the church or had the friends that I have now. So absolutely.
Oh yeah. Well, I love that, Amber. You're right. God will never leave you or forsake you. How do you know that? Because the people who love Jesus right. have never left you
right.
in the last 5 years. Like you can't divorce, right, the community of your church from from right. how this all works out.
I think for me, it has been in the last year a question of, Lord, are you going to continue to provide for me? And then he does, but then I still question it because in my head it's like, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of this. How does he keep providing? Will he do it again? Are you going to fail me next month? Like, and it's just telling myself over and over, like, no, he said he will not fail me. He's the same person today as he was yesterday and will be tomorrow. And his promises are true. And so it's like telling myself that over and over and living on faith. That's been my life the last year, man, living on faith.
Yeah. Well, and you highlight such an important thing, yeah. right? Like none of us are perfect. We all struggle with feeling worthy, feeling like enough. And it's like a daily battle to trust God in the little things.
Absolutely.
And to grow in this and that, right? That posture of vulnerability and humility is something that you have to commit to throughout your life. You can't just say, oh, I made it, man. I'm good. I'm going to chill and relax.
Yeah. It's a uphill battle. Or I think someone said it in a sermon that like your relationship with God is constantly just a roller coaster. You're going to struggle with your faith, then you're going to be on your highs because you're like, oh, everything's great. And then you're like, oh, crap, we're down here again. And it's just, it's a constant thing. You know, I think even doing this podcast, me and Amber have made some realizations just with talking it out. So yes, on having that, you know, friend with the same beliefs that you can come alongside and encourage and support. But as we talk about things, we realize, oh, that's why I went through this thing to help you now through this thing. And I think that's like being able to connect the dots on where God has been faithful in not your life, but in someone else's life. That could have been a completely left turn of what we're talking about. Connecting the dots. You get it, right? Connect the dots.
No, I think it does. And I think what you're saying, you know, right? A relationship with God is hard because the circumstances of life are up and down. I don't think we necessarily have to be up and down in our faith, but we usually are because we think that God loves us if life is good, and we think that God is distant from us if life is bad. And that's where you, Amber, are such an example of that, right? It's a hard season.
I've learned to feel the opposite now.
Like, where's God when it's good? Yeah.
Well,
no, more of like, I have to remind myself, like, on a good day, like, don't forget to be grateful and thank him for everything that you have received, even if it's not a good day. And that's been a struggle, like, having to remind yourself, don't forget to be thankful during the storm.
Yeah. Well, and God's still writing your story, so you're not at the end of that story. You don't know how he's using this for your good and his glory.
Absolutely.
And for the benefit of others.
Absolutely.
And
right. And it excites me in that way too. So
yeah. And I think, right, gratitude and joy are a posture of the heart. They're not a product of your circumstances. So, you know, you can life can be going really well and you can be bitter. Life can be going really bad and you can be grateful. Like the I think that and so much of that connects back to the vulnerability and humility stuff too. Man, I think when our heart is humble and soft and we approach every circumstance with joy and gratitude, that doesn't mean it's easy, but
I've definitely learned that God and I, our relationship's funny. He's got a sense of humor with me. after 2020, my biggest thing that I would pride myself on was, oh my goodness, I've been through so much and I haven't lost my faith. I'm so grateful that I haven't lost my faith. Like, thank you, Jesus. I feel you so close. Like, I'm not going to lose my faith. And then bam, something went worse. And it was like, okay, here's another test, Amber. What about now? I'm like, I still haven't lost my faith. If anything, it's made me stronger, which I appreciate, but it's just so funny because I would say that out loud, like, thank you for keeping me strong and creating me the way you did to be able to go through the things that I've gone through. That's so awesome. And then it gets worse and it's like, okay, God, funny, real funny.
Oh yeah. That's a bit of a different topic altogether, but I think that the way that suffering and hard times draws us to Jesus and makes our faith, you know, even more rock solid is one of the most astonishing things. And I think your story, right?
Absolutely. Like
that you can experience joy in the midst of everything that you've battled, that your faith can be deep, is a really cool deal. Not that what you've gone through is easy or fun, but that God is faithful through it all is amazing.
Yeah. And seeing every little miracle.
Yeah.
I tell her that she is, she's Job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any last thoughts to either one of you?
I'm a little hurt that we didn't get a chance at the beginning, because you know how you do podcasts, you usually open up with some funny stuff at the beginning. So for those of you who have listened until this point, I am the one who shamed Ashley for going to Captain Avatar.
I was trying to be nice and not bring it up.
I hit her with so many of my best shots. I mean, I fired away when she was planning to go to that concert. Like, I was trying to guilt her and shame her into coming on our life group camping trip. And she chose her friend and a has-been over us.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You're not allowed to say that on the show.
I like how he was holding on to that hit me with your best shot joke the whole time, though.
Yes. He loves it. He uses that joke quite often. And for those, since we're not recording video, I unintentionally wore my Pat Benatar shirt today.
Yeah.
It was, I didn't do it on purpose, but yeah. You know, it was meant to be.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're past your prime when two of your most famous songs are Shadows of the Night and Promises in the Dark. She's just overrated, man. I can't.
That is not true. She actually just performed at the iHeartRadio concert. I think you've been off the social media too long. You don't know what's happening in the world. You just don't know.
And the reality is, I mean, I've never been cool in my life ever. So I'm not a real good gauge of this, but
yes, because you would choose camping over a concert. I would choose fishing.
If it were like Kelly Clarkson or Coldplay, maybe you'd have an argument. But yeah, Pat Benatar for over fishing and camping? Are you kidding me? I'm still bitter
over
this.
Didn't I send you the videos of it?
I wasn't going to watch that
video. You said you can send. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't pick up on your cues. You said you can send them to me, but you had no intention of watching them because you're not cool. So next time I see you, you're going to sit down and I'm going to show you the videos.
Pat Benatar still seems better than Kelly Clarkson ever has. No.
That's blasphemy, Amber. No. I was starting to like you too.
You got to learn good music. That's the problem.
Okay. I have seen both of those people live now, Pat Benatar and Kelly Clarkson. They both give a great live show. I like them both. But Ryan really, really, really loves Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, gosh.
Like, really loves Kelly Clarkson.
I'd rather watch Mandy Moore than Kelly Clarkson.
What?
I can't believe you just said those words out loud.
I don't, like,
I can't.
Two very different kind of vocalists. Very different. Amber, ask your mom how the show went. She's right.
She loves it. She just brought me a snickerdoodle. Sorry.
Oh, they're with the cookies. Mom with the cookies again. Oh my gosh.
I'd rather eat a snickerdoodle than go to a Pat Benatar concert.
Hey, remind me.
I don't disagree on that one.
What did your wife give you for, was it Father's Day? Yeah, what did she give you for your Father's Day present? This is gonna speak volumes, okay? What did she give you for Father's Day?
Am I supposed to remember that far away? That was like 4 months ago.
Yeah, if I remember,
I don't remember what she got me. What did she get me?
Kelly Clarkson tickets?
No.
I wish.
She got you what? Didn't she get you like a package of worms for fishing?
Oh, that's right. Yes, she did. No, for So in addition to being a lover of fish and fishing and mountains and hiking, I also love gardening. So she bought me composting worms.
Oh, that's what they were. You were so excited for them.
I know. I love gardening and composting. You should see my yard. It's amazing.
He's also really, really into pickleball. But you know what? Pickleball is like, it's a thing now. It's a thing now. So you can say you're trending on that.
I'm so vulnerable with my life. I have no shame on anything. I mean, I wouldn't know if it was trending or not, but I have no shame.
Well, I sent you that video. Ryan, what is pickleball?
It's like a cross between ping pong, racquetball, and tennis.
But it's not on a table, right?
No, it's on a court. Like it's on a court like a tennis court. It uses a wiffle ball type ball, and it's just amazing. It's the greatest sport of all time.
Yeah, I sent him a video of Melissa McCarthy and her husband are into pickleball, and they were on the Kelly Clarkson show, and they were talking about how much they love it, and I think they said like they wear all white because you need to be even more obnoxious when you play pickleball by wearing all white. So that's your next challenge, is wear all white. Yeah. Ryan.
Oh, I'll totally do it, man. I love pickleball. Sarah doesn't know this yet, but when we retire, we're going to travel the country in an RV and enter into professional pickleball tournaments for the 50 plus age group.
Oh my gosh!
You think I'm? I'm being completely.
Please record
right
it
now.
When you tell her.
That's probably that. If you finally tell her, and that story is going to start circling around Life Group, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, she's for
gonna,
sure.
She's going to tell. Can you believe that this guy? She loves telling the stories of how. My favorite story. We need to tell this. This is my favorite story. Okay, of when you've dropped the ball. Okay.
There are many of them.
Your old church when it was when you guys dressed up as you had your costumes on. Please tell that story.
Right. So So
so good.
We were invited for this new couple. They had just moved from France. They were joining our staff as like missionaries, and so they were a really nice couple, super sweet. But we were just getting to know them. And so they were hosting at their house a dress up party. And so I thought it was a costume party, like dress up costume party. And so I dressed up as a tacky tourist with like tube socks and short shorts and a Hawaiian shirt and one of those like hats, safari hats. And Sarah, my wife, dressed up as Superwoman. And one of my kids was Tigger. And the other one was like a princess or something. We show up and it's not a dress up costume party. It's like a dress up nice party. And so everyone's like looks so nice. And we show up and we're like the awkward people wearing tube socks. We're on all these people wearing like collared shirts and slacks. And I show up and the guy
That's
who
awesome.
We were meeting, the missionary, he looks at my feet because I had on sandals on top of my tube socks. And he goes all the way up to my polyester Hawaiian shirt, and he's like, nice outfit, just like that. And so as we're walking in, Sarah's so mad at me. She's like hitting me like over and over again. She's like, what were you thinking, you idiot? And she didn't say idiot because she's a nice person, but she was thinking it. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yes. So Ryan, always,
oh no,
always ask questions.
Oh no.
Okay? So if you get an invitation like that, clarify. Just always clarify. But you know what? This guy did show up to release party. It was masquerade theme. I felt like that was very clear. And he did show up dressed all nice, wore a mask. Yeah.
Yep.
Did it.
Nice. He understood the assignment.
I'm Ashley's second biggest fan behind Evan.
Oh, I doubt that, sir.
Oh, I had to, on our way to our Mexico mission trip, I had to take his phone because he had just gotten Apple Music and I was not in his library. And I'm like, that's my number two fan there. So I did it myself on his phone.
Yep.
There you go.
Oh, yep. Man.
Well, it's been fun, ladies. I need to go listen to Glass Houses again, so...
It was a pleasure meeting you.
Pleasure meeting you.
Okay. Well, I know you're not on social media, so yeah, nobody can follow you. Do you want us to, if they want to reach out to you, do you want your church email address?
Give it to them. Go for it.
You give it to them because I apparently don't know your email.
My email is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at harborchurch.life, L-I-F-E. So Ryan at harborchurch.life.
Awesome. And you can find me at ashley.read and Ashley Read Music and go listen to Glass Houses. And you can find us both at uncommonfaithpodcast@gmail.com and Uncommon Faith Podcast on Instagram. Amber, where can we find you?
At Amber_N_G on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you again, Ryan, for shooting the breeze with us.
So fun.
See, it was a blast. We're fun people.
Love you, ladies. You ladies are so fun.
We are. Thanks. All right. Until next time, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.